I'm Marianne Kolbaczek-McGee, Executive Editor at Information Security Media Group. Today I'm speaking with regulatory attorney Rachel Rose. We're going to be discussing a new Texas law, Texas SB 1188, that relates to electronic health records, including the security and storage of health information and the deployment of artificial intelligence. So, Rachel, for starters, briefly describe the main parts of this Texas law and what stands out the most and why.
So it's referred to as Texas Senate Bill 1188, and it passed on June 20th of 2025 with an effective date of September 1, 2025, with for most of the provisions, with the exception of the storage requirement. So whenever I read this bill initially, three key areas really jumped out at me. The first is not really related to HIPAA, especially now that the reproductive final rules were basically invalidated in the Pearl case, which is a case out of the Northern District of Texas Amarillo Division. But what is notable, and I'll start off with this, is that this bill requires that the biological sex, as it relates to the gametes that an individual is born with, is included in the medical record documentation. One item to note is that there are rare congenital situations where individuals do develop, as part of the gestation period, two sets of gonads, both male and female, in utero. And so it's very important for providers to indicate that in the medical record too, in these very rare situations. But if you don't indicate that that is a factor, that could in turn be problematic if you mark both male and female, and it could be clinically legitimate. So that's the first item. The second item relates to the security of health record data. And what's important about the Texas law is if we take a step back to 2012, Texas House Bill 300 became effective in September of 2012, and most of its provisions mirror those in federal HIPAA. And in fact, it expressly references federal HIPAA, like a lot of state privacy rules, as well as more state, quote, HIPAA types of laws. So basically, when we look at HIPAA, we have three categories of persons or entities that are covered. First, we have covered entities, and that includes providers, health insurers, and health claims clearinghouses. Secondly, we have business associates. And third, we have a subset of a business associate known as a subcontractor. Now, Texas HIPAA has one definition, and it's called covered entities. That definition not only encompasses the federal HIPAA definitions of covered entity, business associate, and subcontractor, it's much more broad in scope and really relates to any person that creates, receives, maintains, or transmits individually identifiable health information. So it's very important to appreciate the nuances of these different laws and what that means for the security of the data. One area that is related to security is where this type of information is stored. And this provision becomes effective in January of 2026. So thankfully, covered entities in Texas have time to address this. But it requires that IIHI be maintained in either the continental United States or one of its territories, or Alaska or Hawaii. This really isn't unsurprising because a lot of federal government contracts and state government contracts already require this, including Arizona, which had a similar provision in place stemming back over a decade. And the last area that really relates is artificial intelligence and what is required there of a healthcare practitioner and their utilization of artificial intelligence. Specifically, they're looking at generative AI for diagnostic purposes, including recommendations on a diagnosis or course of treatment based on a patient's medical record.
Rachel, what must entities do to comply with this? What should entities be doing right now? Do they need to be assessing, for instance, where they're storing their data? And does this affect entities that aren't in Texas but do handle health information for people who do live in Texas?
Absolutely, and that's not uncommon, Marianne. So if there is cross state transmission of IIHI or any of those types of information, then absolutely it is something that needs to be evaluated. As you know, I am a huge advocate of the annual HIPAA risk analysis. So theoretically, unless an entity is really new or a startup, every organization should know where their data is. And one of the areas that the Texas law does address is cloud computing. And one of the items that I've done for over a decade when I've done HIPAA risk analyses is to ask for the contract, whether it's with Azure, for example, or AWS or two common ones. So that's why I'm mentioning those, as well as those companies' SOC reports and HIPAA risk analyses and the BAAs. People may not be aware, but a company or a person can pay slightly more to keep their data in the United States. And by confirming that they've elected that option in the contract, and then confirming that these companies have at least done a SOC and a HIPAA report, which all the large ones typically do, at least the covered entity or business associate can then say in good faith, if there's ever a breach or a government audit, we verified, we had our external auditor verify, and we got the SOC and HIPAA analyses to provide us with reasonable assurances. So, the first step I would recommend that individuals look at their risk analyses to identify where their data is. Are they contracting with a third party overseas to read radiology reports, for example? That's very common. So, just being aware of where your data is stored and also created and transmitted is going to be vital. From there, you can look at those contracts and say, okay, we're good here. Okay, we're not so good here. And maybe if you didn't realize that you didn't select the US data only provision it from AWS, for example, you can go back and ask for that type of security or that level of contractor plan. It's if there's more of a transmission and you're using somebody overseas to read certain items that you really should delve into that more deeply and see exactly what is being created, received, stored, and transmitted. So that's the first thing there. The second item as it relates to AI is that primarily applies to providers. Why? Because it's providers who are documenting in the medical record. And as we know, providers are a category, whether it's under federal HIPAA or under the Texas HIPAA as well. So, disclosure to patients by providers of their use of AI for diagnostic purposes. That needs to be done. If I were a provider, I would put that in my informed consent, and I would also consider putting it in my notice of privacy practices. Second, utilization of AI is limited to the scope of a provider's license, certification, or authorization. If a person is unsure that the AI is coloring outside the lines, I would contact the relevant licensing board, whether it's the Board of Medicine, the Board of Nursing, the Board of Pharmacy, whatever that is, to make sure that whatever application is being utilized, that it is appropriate within the provider's license as well as the certification. Additionally, AI deployment that is not otherwise restricted or prohibited by applicable or state law means that one needs to ensure that confidentiality, integrity, and security are in place, as well as availability to ensure that whatever AI is being deployed, that it is meeting the HIPAA requirements as well as Texas House Bill 300 requirements. And then lastly, and this is critical, it should be done anyhow, but a provider should review all records anyhow, and especially those created with AI because of hallucinations, in a manner consistent with medical record standards developed by the Texas Medical Board. This item in particular is potentially ripe for medical malpractice and other potential class action lawsuits. So that's an area that if I were a provider, I would take very seriously. We've already seen lawyers, as you know, and experts in court cases sanctioned for not, quote, trusting, but verifying what was submitted to the court. Here you're talking about the potential to adversely harm and potentially kill a person. And that's why shortcuts absolutely cannot be taken in medicine. So, from my perspective, these requirements are all very prudent.
How do the AI provisions in this Texas law compare to what other states are doing? And, does it kind of fill some of the gaps we're seeing on the federal level when it comes to AI as it relates to healthcare data?
As you know, Marianne, the states have been on the forefront of adopting AI laws even before the federal government does. So it's not surprising that we would see this come into play. Texas, in particular, is very much a leader in AI litigation under its Deceptive Trade Practices Act and consumer protection laws. And we've already seen very significant settlements in other areas related to Facebook and Google on the third-party data tracking, which you and I have discussed in various articles. So I'm not surprised that the states are on top of this. Other states are getting involved in a similar manner with AI. And if you look at BIPA, the Illinois biometric law, that's something that we've already seen utilized. And there have been a couple of other states that have given similar laws to the Texas law as it relates to AI and healthcare outside of those items required by HIPAA under the security rule.
So, Rachel, what is at stake if Texas entities violate these new regulations? What are the potential penalties? Are there fines? What can you tell us?
So this law did in fact permit the Texas Attorney General to seek injunctive relief and impose civil penalties ranging between $5,000 and $250,000 per violation. So that's something that may end up being very significant. So, along those lines, if I were a provider or a covered entity under HIPAA, I would start looking at my cybersecurity insurance policies, my D&O insurance policies to see what is being potentially covered if, in fact, something like this should happen. I would also point out that in December of 2020, December 2nd, 2020, is when the Stark and AKS additional safe harbors were published, which became effective for the most part January 19th of 2021. And as you know, those are two very pernicious areas of fraud, waste, and abuse. Within those new Stark Law exceptions and AKS safe harbors, the HHS OIG for AKS and CMS for Stark honed in on cybersecurity and what could constitute a kickback or a form of remuneration. So creative lawyers could potentially intertwine this area with fraud, waste, and abuse, and that can lead to a False Claims Act case or a potential violation under the Texas Medicaid Fraud Prevention Act.
And finally, Rachel, briefly, what else are you keeping an eye on when it comes to Texas and health information privacy and security issues? Earlier you had mentioned the Pearl case. Where do things stand there? The Texas AG filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration alleging that certain provisions of the HIPAA privacy rule were unlawful. There was a ruling there, but then from what my understanding is that the AG was also considering if other provisions of HIPAA privacy law might be unlawful. Where do things stand with that? And maybe you can bring us up to date.
So, what you just mentioned are two separate cases. In the Pearl case, it actually was a provider who brought the matter, saying that she could not comply with her HIPAA obligations, which, if you understand what the reproductive rule did, I think that's preposterous. But having said that, HHS, federal HHS, was the recipient of that. And they had until August the 16th to appeal, given that once a decision is reached in a case, there's a time period that's set forth by the rules of appeal and then the federal rules of civil procedure for an entity to file an appeal. On the HHS website, it specifically states still that HHS was evaluating its options. To my knowledge, no appeal has been filed either. So, one item that I did just read this morning was that Texas is asking for a seat in the case that is challenging the morning after pill. And they're not convinced that Idaho, Kansas, and another state are adequately representing their interest as well as Florida's interest. So Florida's requesting the same thing. So I think reproductive health care in its various forms will be an area to watch in Texas and some of the other states that have really clamped down. And that's just a blanket statement. And I hope the listeners don't read into that anyway, but they've clamped down on that. I think another area that's related, and perhaps this is where the designation of a biological sex in a medical record, well, if you look at anyone's birth certificate, and if you've ever looked at anyone's birth certificate going back centuries, they always designate a male or a female. So, not that that's anything new, but the fact that that's being reinforced in light of some of the transgender issues, I think, is another area just to keep a pulse on. Although, like I said, if there's that rare exception, that should be documented too, because it is a clinical diagnosis. It's just an anomaly.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel. I've been speaking to attorney Rachel Rose. I'm Mary Ann Kolbasek-McGee of Information Security Media Group. Thanks for joining us.